Welcome to Torati Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Sarah Malka Winter, and today we study Malachim Beis, Perek Yud Zayin, Chapter 17. After the sad tale of the rule of Ahaz, the king of Yehuda, and his horrific behavior, most egregious of which seems to be bringing an altar of a pagan god into the Beis HaMikdash, we now return to the Northern Kingdom. One of the challenges in our learning of Malachim Beis has been the necessity to follow two parallel storylines: the story of Malchus Yisrael, the northern kingdom of the 10 tribes, and the story of Malchus Yehuda, the southern kingdom of Yehuda. Tragically, that challenge ends in this chapter. We will no longer be following the 10 tribes. The chances have run out, the time has run out, and in our parak, the 10 tribes are exiled. And of all the tragedies, all the devastation we have experienced in this Sefer Malachim, and perhaps our entire history, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the Inquisition, even the Holocaust, it is possibly this loss of more than 80% of our nation that is the most catastrophic and devastating. Rashi explains that this exile happened in three stages. Back in chapter 15, remember in the days of Pekach ben Remalia, the Assyrian king Tiglath-Pileser had exiled Naphtali and Zebulun? That was stage one and took place in the 20th year of Pekach. Stage two happened 8 years later in our parak, our chapter, when the king of Yisrael is Hoshea, and it was the 12th year of Ahaz, the king of Ashur, exiled Reuven and Gad, after which Hoshea rebelled for 9 years, and then came the final exile when all the rest of the 10 Shvatim were taken. The years continue to be confusing, but keeping this information from Rashi helps us understand Pasuk Aleph. Bishnas 12 la'achaz melech Yehuda malach Hoshea ben Ela bishomron al Yisrael tesha shanim. In the 12th year of Ahaz, Hoshea ruled in Shomron over Yisrael for 9 years. So we understand now, according to Rashi, not that he ruled, but that he rebelled against Ashur and for 9 years, that this rebellion lasts 9 years. So there was time in between each stage of the exile. What would have happened had they seen that first stage when Naphtali and Zebulun were taken as a wake-up call? Had they done teshuva? Or perhaps after the second time, what would our nation look like? What would Eretz Yisrael look like? What would our world look like? Returning to our chapter, Pasuk Beis, verse 2, describes Hoshea's behavior. Vayas hara be'inei Hashem, rak lo kemalchei Yisrael asher hayu lefanav. He did evil in the eyes of God, but not like the other kings of Yisrael that were before him. What does this mean? We know that ever since the days of Yeravam ben Nevat, when he first set up those temples of the calves, it had been against the law for any Jew in the northern kingdom, Malchus Yisrael, to visit the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, it was a crime punishable by death, and there were checkpoints on the highway to ensure that no one broke this law. Well, after those first two exiles, both cities of the calves, Basel and Dun, the Eglei Yeravam had been exiled and the calves were gone. For the first time in hundreds of years, the 10 Shvatim were granted permission to visit the Beit HaMikdash. The guards were gone. The message of Hoshea was, you have been granted the right to choose. If you would like, go to the Beit HaMikdash. You are free to go. This reminds me of 1967 and Mati Goren's words, Hal Habayit Biadeno, the Temple Mount is in our hands, those magical words which still ring in our hearts, which meant that we could finally go to the Kotel to stand near those holy stones. And this has been such a call home to us. So back to Malachim. For the first time, a Jew from those 10 tribes could go home to the Beis HaMikdash, to the house of Hashem, to that beautiful building that showed the world, showed us the remarkable and unique relationship between Hashem and his children. They could stand in Hashem's embrace. But what happened? They didn't. Now that there was nothing standing in their way, now that it was no longer dangerous, they chose to stay home. And demonstrated, they didn't care all that much about the Beis HaMikdash. What they had blamed all along on the guards, on the kings, it just wasn't really true. Because when they were given permission, they just didn't care enough to go. Chazal tell us that with this inaction, their fate was sealed. And in our chapter, the king of Ashur captured Hoshea, the king, and sieged the city of Shomron for 3 years. And in verse 6, the ninth year of Hoshea's rebellion, the king of Ashur captured Shomron, exiled Yisrael to Ashur, and settled them in Bachlach, Chavor, Nahar Gozan, Arei Madai, the cities of Madai. The growing Assyrian empire had a cruel and effective strategy to make sure the countries they conquered would not stage an uprising, a resettlement policy. They would invade, conquer, and then take the people out of their countries and scatter them, resettle them in many different foreign lands where they did not speak the language or understand the culture. This would keep them vulnerable and weak and isolated and unable to rebel. And it would erase identities and nationalities. It would create a hodgepodge of countries and nations. In fact, this happened to so many countries and nations that Rabbi Akiva tells us in the Tosefta of Meseches Kiddushin, Perek He Halacha Dalet, Chapter 5, Law 4, Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, Misha Allah Sancheirev Ubilbel es Kol Ha'umos. Rabbi Akiva said, from the time that Sancheirev came and mixed up all the nations, Lo Ammonim u'Moavim b'mkoman, the Ammonia and Moavim are not in their place. Lo Mitzrayim v'Adomim b'mkoman, Egypt and Edom are not in their place. Ela Ammonino se Mitzris, an Ammoni marries an Egyptian, a Mitzrino se Ammonis, and an Egyptian marries an Ammoni. And as the Rambam writes that lahalacha, according to Jewish law, that in the post-Sancheirev world, it's a mixed up world. And you can't know anymore if someone is an Egyptian, if someone is from Moab or Amalek. But who else did that happen to? It happened to us, our 10 tribes. We talk about the 10 lost tribes and one of the longest, most legend-filled, exciting, and also tragic treasure hunts is the search for those lost 10 tribes. There was discussion of it in the Navi, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, in the times of the Gaonim, Rishonim, all the way up to modern times, questions and clues, sightings and mysteries, stories of the Eret HaChavila in Parshas Bereishis or the river Sambatyon or the desert near Yamsuf. People with ancient Jewish customs discovered in places like Ethiopia, India, Chile, North America. We have Eldar Hadani from Shevet Dan in the 900s who claimed to be from Shevet Dan, the B'nai Moshe in the 1600s, some say the Afghans, some say the aboriginals in the U.S., some say the Japanese, tribes who keep Karban Pesach or circumcision or Shabbos. There have been expeditions and searches all through history. There have been religions founded on them. And a discussion in the Mishnah discussed in Gemara Sanhedrin is certainly relevant here. Aseres hashvatim einan asidin lachzor, sheneemar vayashlichem el eret acheres kayom hazeh. Ma hayom holech ve'eno chozer, af heim holchim ve'enan chozrim. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer omer, kayom hazeh, ma yom ma'afil u'meir, af aseres hashvatim, sha'afela lahen, kach asida la'ir lahem. So this conversation between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva says they are not coming back, and quotes the pasuk in Devarim that says that Hashem will throw them into another land, kayom hazeh. Just as days pass and do not return, so too they have gone and will not return. But Rabbi Eliezer argues and says, no, the meaning of this pasuk is just as the day darkens and the sky brightens the next day, with regard to the 10 tribes as well, although it is dark for them now, so it is destined to brighten for them. Well, what we do know is that in our chapter 17, when the third stage of their exile occurred, this is the last time we see them. And that at Shivas Tzion, the time of Ezra, they did not return. And that almost all the Jews we know of in the world come from only 3 tribes, Yehuda, Binyamin, and some of Levi. Did they understand at the time the impact of what had occurred? Did they understand that they would be lost for thousands of years and maybe forever? But in verses 7 to 22, Yirmiyahu, the author of Malachim, tries to answer the awful, painful question, how did we get here? How did this happen? What brought about this excruciating reality? The nation of Israel had a mission to be the nation of Hashem, to spread monotheism, to be a light to the nations. The land of Israel was to be a model for the world of a different way of living according to the Torah of Hashem, a nation that was guided not by cruelty and selfishness and nationalism, but by service of God, by the question of how can I serve Hashem? And that from the moment Hashem took us out of Egypt, that was the plan, that was the goal. That there shall be one land in Hashem's world that was holy, which could ultimately act as a guide for the rest of the world. And these 10 tribes did exactly the opposite. It tells us in verse 7, Bnei Israel sinned against Hashem, who took them out of Egypt. And in verse 8, rather than living proudly as Hashem's nation, they tried to learn from the ways of the nations. And in verse 9, they made up lies about Hashem. They convinced themselves that He doesn't see our behavior. It doesn't really matter what we do. And in verses 10 to 12, they began to serve idols, pagan gods, made altars on every mountain, under every tree. And in verse 13, Hashem sent so many prophets, saying in verse 13, Shuvu midarkechem haraim v'shimru mitzvosai v'chukosai, return from your evil ways, guard my commandments, guard my laws, kechol haTorah asher tzivisi es avoseichem, the entire Torah that I commanded your fathers, v'asher shalachti aleichem b'yad avadai hanaviim, and that I sent directly to you through the hands of my servants, the prophets. And in verse 14, they didn't listen. They stubbornly refused to listen. And in verse 15, they despised the ways of Hashem, of the Torah. And they despised the covenant that Hashem made with their fathers and His laws. And then the painful words, Vayelchu achareha hevel vayehebalu. They followed worthless things and they became worthless. And in verses 16 and 17, they served the Baal and they killed their own children for pagan god worship. And finally, in verse 18, Hashem was furious with Israel and removed them. And there remained none, just the tribe of Yehuda alone. Even though, as verses 19 and 20 remind us, even the behavior of Yehuda was terrible right now. And they were also punished. There was a clear distinction between the kingdom of Yehuda and Yisrael. Sometimes there is a point of no return. And in verse 23, Ad asher hasir Hashem es Yisrael me'al panav, kasher diber biyad kol avadav hanavi'im, vayigel Yisrael me'al admaso ashura, ad hayom hazeh. Until Hashem removed Israel from before Him, like He spoke through all of His servants, the prophets, and He exiled Yisrael from His land to Ashur until this very day, just as Hashem warned so many times through His prophets. You can almost hear the pain in Yirmiyahu's voice as he wrote those painful words maybe 100 years after they were taken. And here we are, thousands of years later, and we need to say, yes, Yirmiyahu, they're still lost. And then what follows, beginning in verse 24, is a very strange and miraculous story. Just as Sennacherib resettled the 10 Shvatim in foreign lands, Sennacherib resettled other nations from other countries into Shomron, from Bavel, from Kus, from Avel, from Hamas, from Sfarvayim. And in verse 25, they served their pagan gods as they had done everywhere else. And Hashem sent lions into Shomron, and the lions start to kill. In verse 26, these resettled people recognized that this was from Hashem and sent an SOS to the king of Ashur. We don't know how to serve this God. We're all going to die. In verse 27-28, the king of Ashur sends a Kohen, a priest, to teach the people Echirus Hashem, how to serve God. And what he taught them was, you may continue to serve your idols, but as a medium. You must recognize that Hashem is the ultimate God above all your idols. Differences of opinions as to what kind of Kohen this was. Was he a Kohen Hashem? Had he himself been a worshiper of the calves? But certainly, according to Radak, this Kohen understood that to ban these non-Jews from any idol worship would not work, and that is why he allowed for this compromise. For them, at least, this quasi-acceptance of Hashem would suffice, and the lions left them alone. Verse 34 is up for discussion. Ad hayom hazeh hem osim kamishpatam harishonim. Einam yirei imes Hashem, ve'einam osim kechukosam ukamishpatam. V'cha Torah, v'cha mitzvah, asher tziva Hashem es b'nei Yaakov, asher sam shemo Yisrael. Until this very day, they are doing like their earlier behavior. They do not fear God. They do not keep His laws, His Torah, His commandments that Hashem had commanded the children of Yaakov when He named them Yisrael. The question is, who is the subject of this verse? In context, it certainly seems to be these non-Jewish new immigrants to Shomron, and it is kind of an explanation as to their status. Later on, beginning in Ezra and Nehemiah and all the way through the times of the Mishnah and Gemara, maybe even till today, we are going to suffer so much at the hands of these non-Jewish idol worshippers who also serve Hashem, and it will be questionable as to, did they ever convert sincerely? The answer based on this verse seems to be a resounding no, because as the rest of the chapter will explain, being a Jew means serving Hashem and being in a covenant with Him completely and uniquely. While it was enough for them as non-Jews, even in Hashem's land, to avoid death by lion, it was not enough to truly be considered Hashem's people. But others say this verse 34 and the rest of the chapter is a sad return to the 10 tribes, that even after their exile, they did not return to Hashem. Their generational mistakes continue. And again, Yirmiyahu writes with the agony of someone staring at the devastation and answering the painful question, Eicha, how did this come to be? Thank you for studying together Li'iloi Nishmot, Imahotenu Hayikarot, Esther Oppenheimer, Alaa Hashalom, and Sarah Schenker, Alaa Hashalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.